And David Wilcock, our special guest, we're going to come back and talk with him about Ascension, the meaning of his title, The Ascension Mysteries, and we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, David Wilcock with us and your calls. David, Ascension, tell me what you mean by that, Ascension.
Well, I think this is really the focal point of the whole discussion. That's why I called the book The Ascension Mysteries. There's different takes on it, and I don't really push a particular interpretation on my reader, but I do offer perspective on what these teachings tell us. And in the other two books, I really kind of focused on more of a gradual scenario, whereas in this book, I focus a lot more on the data pointing towards a spontaneous scenario. And by spontaneous, I mean if you're ready for it, you end up transforming into a higher level of human evolution. And the prophecies suggest that it may not happen immediately, but that within a reasonable time, that we will be able to have things like telekinesis and teleportation, just with the power of the mind, telepathy, all these really astonishing abilities that would normally be seen as only the purview of masters and yogis and saints, they become things that we all can do. And that's a very exciting future. The universe isn't going to give you these gifts if you're not responsible enough to be able to handle them. And I think that's the key, is we all have to grow up and learn not to war with each other and fight with each other. And the seeming powerlessness that we have over these geopolitical events on the global stage ultimately inspire us to change on the personal level, and that's where it really counts. That's where the ascension process really happens. It's not something that you just sit around waiting to see. It's very much a daily, active, transformative process involving engaging in your own spiritual work and doing the hard work of learning to love and accept others and forgive them for the things that they're doing, because it's a very challenging ongoing process.
And of course, Jesus ascended as well. So is there some similarities there?
Well, if you look at the Casey reading, since you brought it up already, he described his readings, which seem to be coming from a very high source, described Jesus as our elder brother, and that they also say Jesus is the pattern. And what they mean is, and there is actually one quote in the Bible that wasn't sanitized where Jesus says, and it's John 14:12, where Jesus says, as I do these things, meaning the miracles, so will you do these things and greater things. So clearly he's not the only one that has these abilities, and this notion of a second coming of Christ seems to be not just one messianic figure, as people often describe it, but a variety of people who start to have this happen to them and are then able to do things to dramatically tip the scales on earth in our favor.
What do you think of end times prophecy, David?
I think it's very reflective of realities that we're already seeing. We've had the hottest summer on record. We are having wars and rumors of wars. We're having wailing and gnashing of teeth. We're having mass starvation, droughts, epidemics, financial destitution, all the stuff that, if you go back to what the Hindus said about the Kali Yuga, Buddhist end-time prophecy, Islamic end-time prophecy, Christian end-time prophecy, Judaism, I mean, it's all over the place. The Hopi prophecy, I mean, everybody basically described a world that becomes increasingly polarized, where the contrast between good and evil becomes so obvious. And of course, the New Agers and White Lighters are going to say, oh, there's no evil and you need to just love the evil. But look, if you get abducted by reptilians and pulled into the galactic slave trade, I don't think you'd be saying there's no evil.
No.
So,
no.
There are some real things that we have to contend with, and in the greater sense, the spiritual teachings tell us that this is all a big hologram, and it's all identity, and there's only one identity, which is the creator of the universe, ultimately, and we're all iterations of that in our own way, with only, you know, we do have free will, but ultimately how we treat others is how we treat ourselves. And that's the real cosmic awakening that we get, is when the individuality starts to break down, we begin to perceive ourselves as interconnected with others. That's growing up. That's maturity. That's ascension. Ascension is realizing that we're not separate people, and what we do to others directly affects us.
And you claim that we have extraterrestrial DNA in our system.
Absolutely. That's a widely held notion in the insider community, and there's also poignant data in the real world that validates that. We found very bizarre skeletons with elongated skulls all over the planet, everywhere from South Africa in the Baskop area to Omsk, Siberia. You see these people in the Egyptian pharaohs, in the sculptures and paintings and carvings of them. You see them in Peru. There's a variety of skulls that have been found in Peru and Bolivia and Brazil and these other places that have those characteristics. When I was at Contact in the Desert, we had Brian Forster there, and he's now saying that those skulls are being medically analyzed, and they don't have the same number of fissures in the skull that ours do, and they have odd characteristics. Well, guess what? Those people were here. Most of the time when you find these skeletons, they're given honorable burials, clearly showing that they were people of public prominence. And it's very likely that they did interbreed with us. And therefore, to hear it from the insiders, we are a very hybridized human race. There's a lot of different DNA that has been mixed together to make us who we are today. And that's part of why we are so spring-loaded for ascension, is a lot of this DNA is like hot-wired for ascension. We're actually much more capable of ascending than most other races would be in terms of how fast and how powerful we will be once it happens.
All right, let's go to the calls. International line, Jillian in Markham, Ontario in Canada. Hi, Jill. Go ahead.
Hi. So great to talk to you and David.
Great.
Thanks, Jillian.
Yes. I'm wondering how we can help the ascension. I have friends that are going on raw vegan diets, and they say they're getting incredible amount of abilities because of this, cleaning out their body. And if you've heard of this.
Yeah, I did the vegan diet for 7 years, and I ultimately had to let go of it. I think that's a very important step in the right direction. My diet now would be considered paleo, and there are going to be whole groups of people that are up in arms when I say that, because veganism is like a religion. But I want to point out that the reason why you get such a payoff from doing it is that there are all these, what they actually call, and this is from guys that were in the Illuminati acting as whistleblowers who told me this, there are several different things in our regular food supply that they call weapons systems. And that would include citric acid as a preservative. Citric acid is extremely toxic. If you have it in its raw form, it has to be considered a hazardous material. Refined sugar, which is in so many things, all the corn syrup and all that stuff. MSG, which can show up as hydrolyzed soy protein, monosodium this, you know, all this kind of stuff. Then also, I don't know, there's so many, wheat. You just can't eat wheat at all. It's very bad. Of course, corn is genetically modified. Dairy is really bad. So when vegans go vegan, they don't have dairy anymore. You're not getting all the growth hormones and all the weird stuff that they inject into the cows these days. So yeah, that diet will help you. What I do is I have a diet that has ethical meat blended back into it, but it has to be very high quality, where the animals are treated well, they're not put into any type of uncomfortable conditions. And so that makes my choices very limited. So my diet is still predominantly like a vegan, but I also use very high quality protein sources at times.
Have you always watched what you eat?
No. I was very overweight from about fifth grade up until maybe the end of 10th grade.
Really?
Yeah, and that story of my weight loss and how I got over that when I was 16 years old is in the book.
Yeah. Were you chubby overweight?
Oh, yeah. No, I weighed 225 pounds at 5'9".
Jeez.
So, and that was not
healthy. No, you weren't on the football team,
so,
were you?
I had the moobs and the spare tire and all that. You know?
Oh my gosh.
A heavy kid. And
you've done your metamorphosis, David.
Back in those days, nobody else was, and so I was the fat kid, and I got bullied and teased mercilessly for it.
Back to the cabal for a moment. Would you say the cabal is the evil part of the good evil?
I would say they're an aspect of it. The cabal ultimately is controlled by negative extraterrestrials. The main group that's controlling the negative extraterrestrials would be the Draco reptilians. They also have other groups that they are dominating that are extraterrestrial as well. But then the Draco actually have a god. They worship an AI, and the AI is ultimately controlling the Draco. And what we find out from many other extraterrestrial races is that the AI is ultimately what we would think of as Satan or Lucifer, and it's this force that will use biological life forms to do its biddings. Those forms end up getting injected with nanites that basically take over their body. You get super lifespan, you get super healing capabilities, you get super expansion of your mind, but you've lost your soul. And ultimately what the AI does is it destroys all biological life. And it seems that whatever this thing is, it exists in the spiritual form, but it cannot take flesh because if it does, it's subject to judgment. And I know that sounds very Christian, but this is how it's been explained to me by some very high-level whistleblowers who identify as Christian, but they also work for the government. So there you have it.
All right. Let's go next to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
And great interview tonight, David.
Thank you, Tom.
David, I wanted to ask you about, people, the cabal travels between the stars with hardware, but isn't the poor person's method of travel, isn't that through portals, through megalithic sites, power spots, power mountains here on the Earth? It's as if the Earth is riddled with portals that directly connect us to the universe, to other star systems, to other planets. The Native American traditions talk about portals at
sure.
power spots such as Mount Shasta, Kuchama, here in the San Diego area,
mm-hmm.
And even in power spots, in the Southwest, etc., in England, in France, in Asia, these power spots connect us directly because they are portals. You go to the power spot, whether it's Giza Plateau, Göbekli Tepe, Baalbek, etc., Stonehenge, and at certain times you can step through into another world, another star system. And I was wondering if you would comment on that as opposed to hardware, craft, spacecraft, that maybe the techniques of travel between the stars are already there, existing as portals all over.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I could do a two-hour dissertation easily and only do a basic outline to answer your question. So let me see if I can do an elevator version.
In 2 minutes.
Yeah. The new book, Ascension Mysteries, is essentially a companion volume to my original book, The Source Field Investigations, which is a cosmic encyclopedia, has over 1,000 academic references. And I do get heavily into portals in both of those books. The new Ascension Mysteries book has a lot of stuff on this. But to go back to Source Field for a minute, what we're ultimately dealing with is sacred geometry that appears as resonant fields in the gravitational field, actually. So they're like waves in gravity, and they're invisible, but they exert force, and they actually shape the continents and the mountain ranges and the undersea volcanic ridges on Earth. And there are all different levels of geometry depending on where you're looking, and it's when they cross, because they all rotate at different speeds, and that's geometry inside the Earth as well as geometry in the alignment of the planets. when certain alignments take place, you get these bubbles that actually glow. They give off light. And if you happen to go inside one of those bubbles, you could portal. But the question is, can you control where it's going to go? And so a lot of these ancient sites, their basic purpose is to harness those bubbles, to draw them in at the times that they're formed. But then what we now know from high-level insiders like Corey Good is that the priesthoods would have these special tools, such as things made out of solid gold. And those tools are very important in terms of knowing where you're going once you step into that ball of light. Because if you don't have one of those tools, and you don't have a highly developed consciousness, you could very easily get lost somewhere in space and never come back.
Remember the movie Contact with Jodie Foster, okay?
I had lunch with the guy that wrote that movie today because he's working on my new film.
Really?
Bring that up, yeah.
How about that?
Yep.
Talk about synchronicity.
I mean, we're 3 weeks away from finishing Convergence. Thank God, finally, after all these years.
It's taken you a long time, but it'll be worth waiting for.
Yeah, and we got a bunch of financiers lined up who want to work with A-list screenwriters, and they want to do Disclosure films, and so things are looking really good right now.
Good for you, David. Now, did he talk a little bit about Contact and what he meant by that wormhole for travel? An incredible propulsion system.
Yeah, that is essentially, he didn't know, let's just put it clearly, he didn't know that this was based on truth. And we talk a lot about why did she see an apparition of her father, even though it clearly was some other being that was not her father. And that this is, and he says, this is how it's been done for billions of years.
That's right. And they're looking for the same thing we're looking for.
Yeah. And that's just a very accurate reflection of what's really going on. Jim is working on another film with a major UFO personality. I can't say who it is yet because it's, you know, these things are governed by proprietary agreements.
Of course.
Speak about them, but I'm just really excited that he's doing my film. And I mean, we did not plan this. It's really funny that you would bring that up because I literally just, I had to take a big bite out of my schedule and drive down to Santa Monica. We had lunch at True Food Kitchen. And I had the salmon, and he had the salmon, and we had our little drinks and talked about the film and basically, you know, sealed up all the plot details. And he thinks that this could be one of the best things he's ever written. So coming from the guy that wrote Contact, that's pretty exciting.
That is exciting, David. David, give out your website, and where can people get the big book, The Ascension Mysteries?
Sure. I have two websites now. One is divinecosmos.com, D-I-V-I-N-E.
That's the one you've had for a while, right?
Yeah, and the new one is dwilcock, D-W-I-L-C-O-C-K.com, and that's where I'm giving people ascension updates that might be too sensitive for me to put out on a public website normally. So there's like an email sign-up on that
okay.
one. I also, of course, have the new book that's come out. It's in audio form, it's in Kindle form, and it's also in hardcover. However, this week, up until, I guess, September 6th, if you're thinking about buying it at all, right now is the time to do it because it costs less and it ensures that we get on the bestseller list. And that's important because we're trying to get this thing into mainstream credibility. If I'm lucky, I'll be able to announce very soon one of the most famous rock stars ever on Earth is going to be endorsing my book with a tweet and a picture of himself holding it. And we've been talking about this. I was on the phone with him for 2 hours the other night. I hope he does it. I think he's going to, and that will be great.
Is his first name Tom?
No.
All right. We're going to come back and take final calls with David Wilcock on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Doc Wallach joins us for the first couple hours from criticalhealthnews.com, followed by David Icke. So you don't want to miss that show. We shall be back in a moment. And welcome back. Our final segment with David Wilcock as we talk about his work, The Ascension Mysteries. David, how long have you been working on this book?
Wow. I guess the initial disclosure of this grand story of the cosmic history of our solar system, which I've only barely touched on so far, came to me in August 2014. But it was essentially informing work that I've been doing in terms of studying whistleblower testimony and talking to them myself for 20 years. So everybody wants to know, what do your insiders say? What's the deepest intel you can give us? And in my other two books, I tried to satisfy the skeptics who only want things that are scientifically provable, whereas in this book, I really just come out with all of the insider stuff. So it's like full disclosure in the book, and I try to map on the science to it as much as I can, and the extraterrestrial archaeology we see on various planets and moons, and all that stuff fuses together. So it's, I think people are going to say this is my best book. It's certainly going to be the most sci-fi and interesting in terms of its scope and the depth. I'm very pleased with how it's turned out. So it's at least 20 years in the making, really.
You know, as the Bible talks about good and evil, they talk about the, you know, the fallen angels and such. Do you think that really happened, or were we talking about extraterrestrials?
Fallen angels are extraterrestrials, as far as what these government officials are telling me.
Yeah.
And, you know, they might have their own agenda. They might not be entirely truthful, but I tried to take their words and put them to task, and there is a lot of evidence that there was an extraterrestrial civilization here on Earth of refugees that did in fact crash land and had these elongated skulls, 300 IQ, larger brains, that they took over various continents that they landed on all over the planet and formed kingships and royal bloodlines, and that in fact some of them are still here, and apparently they exist in certain places where they wear these elongated hats, you know, certain mm-hmm. cities or cities within nations. And you know, it's a very contentious subject, but there are whistleblowers who I describe in the book, like Karen Hughes, who had somebody that met with leaders of the financial system, and one of these guys had a very strange elongated skull and very piercing blue eyes.
All right, let's go to
anything like a regular person.
Let's go to the final calls here for you, Mr. Wilcock. Let's go east of the Rockies. Don in Augusta, Georgia. Hey, Don, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. The nice topic is great, and y'all
sure
doing
thing.
A good job. I can't agree with you more about what you're saying about fear being used as a way of controlling and manipulating people. I think when somebody's under stress or in fear, they can't use their abilities. And I noticed when I quit watching the mainstream news so much, I get all my news from George, and I quit drinking fluoride and some other things, my paranormal abilities just went through the roof.
I mean, absolutely.
I can read people's minds and think clear, and I think I've been in fear my whole life, worried about getting an accidental nuclear war or some kind of event, and just, you know, if I can get this fear off my back, I can use my abilities better.
Well, once you get rid of that fear, then you're no longer providing these negative entities with the food supply that they're using our planet as a farm for. That's really the bottom line, as crazy as it sounds.
They live on fear, don't they?
They actually do.
They feed it, they grow with it, they nurture it, and everything else.
And one of the contentious points is, why would a loving God create a universe this way? And the answer is, the hero's journey, the struggle between good and evil, is written into the cosmic nature of the universe itself. And I really go into that in my second book, Synchronicity Key, go into all the details about Hollywood screenwriting and that every movie is basically the same hero's journey story. And you have to have a villain. And so the villain is given an incentive to do evil because they require it. And they either have the option ultimately of going positive or else they essentially dissolve back into the pure energy of the universe. So you can't stay evil, but you can choose that path and you can get power from black magic. And it really works.
David, why was the God of the Bible so evil? And let me rephrase that. I can't say evil, but so aggressively mean about things.
Specifically, you would be referring to Yahweh in the Old Testament.
Right.
And this is an area where the Law of One goes into detail about it in saying that Moishe, or Moses, was originally in contact with a positive entity, but because he was doing psychic parlor tricks and having people say, hey, man, you know, take your staff and turn it into a snake, and he said, sure, check it out, that he ultimately lost his positivity from that, which, again, is contentious. It's a very contentious subject, but this is what the Law of One says, that the negative Yahweh was able to, it wasn't actually named Yahweh at all. It took that name, and that's the angry God of the Old Testament. the angry God of the Old Testament is a Draco. And so you're going to see all of this Draco type of stuff that it's saying and doing, like, I will smite thy firstborn, and I will bathe you in blood, and all this kind of crazy stuff.
Isn't a Draco a reptilian?
Yes.
And didn't they also confuse the Draco as the devil?
Yes. I mean, the Draco live in underground bases. They have vertical slit pupils and reptilian skin, and Christians have been saying that Satan lives in hell, and hell is underground. And so there is some kind of weird,
that's amazing,
subconscious telepathic thing where we're tapping into something that's true.
West of the Rockies, Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. You're on with David Wilcock. Wayne, hi.
Good evening, gentlemen. David, I wanted to ask you if you think that the psychic abilities that you have can be achieved by people, perhaps maybe Mensa people or something that can tap into other things, you know, like Dr. Doom teaches his program.
Remote viewing, yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that, yeah, intuitive ability, I just want to say this at the outset. I don't think that I have any special DNA or special power. I was fortunate enough to get into this and start reading books on how to develop ESP when I was 7, and I began practicing the exercises. And it was only after I practiced the exercises that I had my psychic club and that I did classroom demonstrations. Before that, I only had natural ability, which a lot of kids do, and it wasn't anywhere near as sharp as it was once I practiced. And so once we get a more formal disclosure of the truth and people understand what's really going on, then they're going to see, Wayne, that our lives are made to have this ability. And it's been taken from us by disinformation, by lies, by fear, by telling us that it's evil or it's negative. But again, even if you're coming at it from a mainstream Christian perspective, if Jesus is saying in John 14:12, as I do these things, so shall ye do them, well, then Jesus is able to walk up to a woman and tell her who she cheated on her husband with and give the names. You know, that's in the Bible. So if he could do that, then ultimately he's saying we'll be able to do those things as well.
Remarkable work that you continue to do, David. Does it come to you via whistleblowers, some of it?
That's a more recent phenomenon. I would say that originally, for many years, it was just straight-ahead academic research. And as a kid, I was doing a lot of academic research. I was reading books all the way back in fifth grade. I read a book from Francis Crick on DNA not being possibly random at all, but that it had to have been a divine design. I read a book called Body Language by Dr. Julius Fast when I was in seventh grade. It fascinated me because it talked about the subconscious and how it reveals itself in the way that we hold our bodies. I was reading books on lucid dreaming when I was a junior in high school, shamanism, all this kind of stuff. It was only later on when I found out that NASA knew that extraterrestrials were real since its inception and had been covering it up, that I began to very deliberately seek out people who had this knowledge. And for many years, I couldn't find them. And I was just a blogger writing stuff on the internet back at a time when you basically had to have like a doctorate to be able to make a website. And I was lucky enough to get in early. And so people started to come to me because there really was nobody doing this back then. Very few people. And over the years, I built up a cadre of insiders who have impressive credentials. Many of them have come forward. Others have not. And I just have tried to synergize everything they say together, both on Cosmic Disclosure and in this new book. I'm so excited. It's a major relief for me to finally be able to just tell the truth. And I'm not concerned about what the skeptics are going to say because I didn't write this for them.
Without the fallout.
Yeah, I mean, I've done two books that prove that I can show you. I mean, look, people wanted to give me an honorary PhD for the first book, just the first half of the first book, because you only need 120 to 150 references for a PhD. My first book has 1,000. Second book has over 600. The third book has something like 300. So, you know, multiple PhDs worth of research in there. That's why I got, you know, two shows on Gaia. That's why I'm on Ancient Aliens all the time, just like you are, George. You know, we're, I don't know about you, buddy, but I mean, everywhere I go, people are like, oh man, there you are. You know, it's crazy what's happened in my life, especially in the last 6 months. It seems like everywhere I go, I'm now getting recognized. Everybody wants a photo. And I think that's just because I've done hard work, just like you have, George, for a long, long time. And I've just stayed in the game.
It pays off.
It just took off.
You're getting the information. Let's go to Dennis in Idaho. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling.
Hi, guys. Hi, Dom. George, you amaze me with your knowledge about how the God of the Bible is depicted there as like a monster. You know, it's a long, big discussion. You were spot on. George, I have a question for you first, the star of our show, our main guy, you and Tom. And then, David, I want to ask you a question about ascension, share something with you.
Okay.
Yeah, my first question to you, George, it's great hearing your voice. You guys are wonderful tonight. Your new book, I want to know about it, and where should I buy it?
Okay, very quickly, Night Talk. It's available at Amazon.com. It's the cheapest way. So you just go in there and type in two different words, Night Talk, and the book will pop up, and you can order it that way.
Cool. I read Worker in the Light, which was the other book you had before, and I really liked that. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
That'll be fun. And go ahead, Dennis, with your question for David.
You guys are awesome tonight, yeah. And George, thank you for what you're doing with the electromagnetic pulse weapon.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to give
really
up on that.
Really take us out. That is so important. You're the star. That's awesome what you're doing there. That would just take us out. So you're really doing something for all of us Americans. That's great. Thank you. David, my question to you, sir, you're amazing. I've studied reincarnation. I studied the world scholar, Dr. Ian Stevenson.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
I'm sure I know you know about it and everything. So
absolutely.
When you read about you a long time ago about how you were it could be Edgar Cayce reincarnated, it makes total sense to me.
So those who don't know, Dr. Ian Stevenson followed up on something like 3,000 different cases of children who allegedly remembered past lives.
Yes.
And then he found out that you could academically compare what they said to reality and that they lined up, and also that in the cases where they did line up, because these 3,000 were the ones that worked, obviously some of them are not going to work, but a lot of them did, that these kids would actually look like the people they said they had been before. And the inheritor of Dr. Ian Stevenson's research is Dr. Jim Tucker, who I'm sure you've had on the show.
Yeah.
And he has now used police forensic face matching software to prove that people who are genuine reincarnations of someone else have such a strong facial similarity that they could literally be charged with the crime that they committed in a past life. And my facial similarity to Cayce is absolutely undeniable. It's been verified by multiple experienced portrait artists, by an orthodontist, by many different people who have credentials. And we have this weird thing with the astrology where it's the only time in 127 years after Cayce's death where my planets line up so well with his. I had to be born when I was for that to happen. The likelihood of the face match and the astrology coming together, we've calculated it as many billions to one against chance. It's just very unlikely that anything but the reincarnation hypothesis could be a factor in this.
Let's go to Tom in Maryland. Let's get a couple more calls in here before we are done. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'll make this quick so the other callers can get on. George, you're scaring me. You blaspheme the God of the Bible to the world. I'll pray for you, sir. I've been listening to you forever. I pray for you anyway.
Thank you. I'll take all the prayers I can get.
Mr. Wilcock, I was on your site, and I was wondering, information, very interesting. You have information on DNA and purpose of life. I read a lot of the reviews, and they all seem very positive. I was wondering, though, I couldn't find a bibliography that stated where the information came from. Is this information just imparted to you, or are you relying upon scientific studies? I'll leave you with this. As far as the DNA is concerned, it has a directionality, and it usually exists as a double-stranded structure. with both strands cooled together, but it's made up of different nucleotides. What have you found with the different DNA you mentioned as far as the nucleotides, and what are those ramifications? I'd like if you could expand just on.
And you want me to have time for another caller, too? Wow.
No, this will be it. 2 minutes left. You're on.
Okay. So point number one, no, this is not just based on channeling or insider testimony. I don't think anybody, except for maybe Lynn McTaggart in her book, The Field, and maybe the classic, there's some other classic books that talk about the Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot. That's one mm-hmm. of them. Hardly anybody's done as much academic research as I've done into DNA, and it's all based on science. And I will also point out, I have strived as much as possible to use references where if you buy the ebook, you can go into them and click on the links and read the website yourself. The really cool thing, and I'm sure George works the same with your book, is people can now buy the audio version, which in my case I narrated it myself, and it will read it along with the ebook. So you can have it read to you, and it'll like light up the words and stuff as it goes along. So you can buy them together and do that. It's really cool.
And by the way, the audio version is a lot of work, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Your eyes start playing tricks with the copy.
It was a whole week of just grueling intensity, yes. But it was wonderful. I mean, I had a lot of fun. I laughed a lot. It was a very enjoyable experience for me. To get to the second question, he's talking about
30 seconds left.
DNA. We are, in fact, I'd like to refer back to the movie that I was in, Sirius, and I think, George, you might have been in that, too.
I popped in.
Yeah, you were in there. And we, in that movie, described this little corpse that was 6 inches tall, humanoid, but with a very large skull, in which some of the top geneticists in the world tested it and confirmed that it had 10% anomalous DNA. And it's so... Clearly.
That alone is dramatic. David, thank you. We're out of time. The Ascension Mysteries by David Wilcock. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Greg Bishop, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.